The first time I dove off the high dive didn't go very well. If I remember right, I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. Public pool, the high dive. And I remember it took all the nerve I could gather together to climb that ladder that felt so tall. And then walk out on the end of that board in space. And I remember getting out on the end of that board and looking down at the water, and it felt like it was forever down to the surface of the water. But it was important that I maintain my cool, because my buddies were watching me, you know. You can't show any fear when your buddies are watching you. And I remember I took a deep breath and I dove head first off the front of the board, and it went really well until I hit the water. See, I wasn't prepared for the force of the impact. My arms got wrenched sideways and it hurt one of my shoulders. And my body had tipped a little too far back so that my back got slapped pretty good by the water, the impact. Any of you guys ever experienced something like that off the high dive? Yeah, okay. So you know what I'm talking about. Well, you know, I had my buddies watching, so I had to put on a good face, and it didn't hurt. Climbed up out of the pool, took my place along the side. And that was the last time I dove off of the high dive for quite a while. I made up a bunch of excuses for my friends why I wasn't able to dive for several weeks after that. Oh, yeah, my mother this told me that. And I got to go. And, you know, different things. And then I had to face my fear and I had to try it again. So weeks later, I climbed up there and it went fine. Though I was prepared for the impact, I knew what to expect that time. I entered the water, no problem, and, you know, I was diving, no problem after that. But it can be hard to get back on the horse after you get bucked off, can't it? Overcoming our fear of having failed can be difficult. And this is what we'll see in the life of Moses today in our story. Because if you were here last week, you remember he got some serious road rash last week in the story. And today, God's going to ask him to get back on the horse. And it's going to take a little work. It's going to take a little work to get him there, but he'll eventually get back up. We're continuing to work our way through Hebrews chapter 11, that famous chapter on faith. And we're in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 27 and 28 today. It says, by faith he, Moses, left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. You're going, what does that have to do with diving off the high dive, Jeff? We'll get to it. I got 30 minutes, more or less. But when we read this, these two verses, we might call this the backside of Moses' Egypt story. Because we read the front side of this story last week about how Moses fled Egypt because he was afraid of the anger of Pharaoh. Just the opposite of what's said here. He was afraid of the anger of Pharaoh because Pharaoh put out a warrant for him to have him killed because he had killed one of the Egyptian slave masters. Today we're going to read about Moses overcoming his fear of Pharaoh and his own past failure. And by faith he follows God's call back to Egypt where he delivers God's message to Pharaoh and he leads the people of Israel out of Egypt by God's mighty hand. I want to review where we're at in the story. Moses spent most of the first 40 years of his life living as a member of the Egyptian royal family, having been adopted by the Pharaoh's own daughter when he was a very young child. During that time of his life, he was raised in Egyptian, being taught all aspects of Egyptian culture, their history, their customs, their science, their language, their philosophy, their religion. He was an Egyptian in every aspect of his life but one, his heart. He was an Israelite at heart. The things that his Israelite birth parents had taught him while he was living with them in that first 3 or 4 years of his life stayed with him. And as he grew older, his interest in the Israelite people also grew. The brutal oppression of the Israelites by the Egyptians began to eat away at him. And the strong sense of calling and mission began to come alive inside of his heart. He wanted to somehow rescue his people from their awful plight. This burned in his heart. Well, one day, while Moses is watching his people at their hard labor, he witnesses one of the Egyptian slave masters brutally beating an Egyptian worker. And Moses could no longer just sit back and watch what was happening and do nothing about it. So before he even fully realized what he was doing, he looked around to see if anyone was watching, and he went up and he killed the Egyptian slave master and then buried him in the sand. Well, unfortunately for Moses, what he had done didn't remain a secret for very long. And when the Pharaoh learned what Moses had done, he put out a warrant to have him executed for murder. Moses fled Egypt, and he settled in the desert wilderness of Midian, where he would then live for the next 40 years as a fugitive. Well, during those 40 years, out in that desert wilderness, working as a shepherd, Moses was profoundly changed as a man. Moses had been a man of reckless passion and arrogant self-confidence before. He has become a humble, thoughtful, prayerful man, painfully aware of his shortcomings, and content now to live out his days in this quiet corner of the Midian wilderness. Turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 3. That's where we'll be this morning. Exodus chapter 3. The first verse says, "Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Here, at the foot of this mountain, on the far side of the desert, in the land of Midian, surrounded by a bunch of sheep, Moses is going to have an encounter with God that will change the direction of his life forever." Verse 2. "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, 'I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned.' When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here I am.' Then he said, 'Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground.' And he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God." So Moses noticed this very strange bush that appeared to be on fire, but it wasn't burning up. And when he came up to this bush to investigate it, the voice of God begins speaking to him from within this bush. In verse 7, it says, "Then the Lord said, 'I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. And now behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Well, this is it. I mean, this is the big phone call from heaven that Moses has been waiting for, right? Or is it? Verse 11, here's Moses' response. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? This is the thud that was heard round the world. See, 40 years earlier, in the story last week, Moses was living in Egypt, and he would have jumped at the opportunity to do this. In fact, he did jump at the opportunity to do this. Following his own inclinations, he ended up with all kinds of road rash all over his life. Remember? He killed that Egyptian, and he had to flee Egypt. Yeah, great rescuer, Moses. Well, he's learned his lesson about getting involved in other people's problems. He's staying out of it. He's minding his own business from here on out. That's basically what he tells God. He's, that's not any of my business, what's going down in Egypt. Moses responds to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? You got the wrong guy. I'm not qualified or prepared for such a thing. So verse 12, God says, but I will be with you. And this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. So God responds to Moses' reluctance by reassuring him, saying, I will be with you. See, Moses asked, who am I? And God answers, it doesn't matter who you are. I will be with you. Your qualifications and preparedness are not what will ultimately determine the success of this mission. I am. That should have been enough assurance for Moses to get on board with God's plan, but it isn't. Here comes Moses' second attempt to reason God out of using him for this rescue mission. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? So first Moses asked, who am I? And the Lord answered, it doesn't matter who you are, it matters who I am. So now Moses comes back saying in a sense, okay, then who are you? You're the God of our fathers, yes, but what does that mean? How is that going to make any difference in our lives? How is that going to change the circumstances for these people? What kind of God are you? How are you different from other gods? How do I communicate your nature to the Israelite people? In that culture, the name carried with it the character, the authority, the power of the one named. So when he asks what God's name is, he's wanting to know what kind of character and authority and power God has. The people are going to want to know if they can trust this God. So verse 14 is God's answer. Famous answer that has kept theologians yammering for centuries. God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Well, what does the name I am who I am mean? How does this answer Moses' question about who God is and if he can be trusted? I am comes from the Hebrew verb for to be. God's name is a declaration of his eternal self-existence. He is who he is and always was and always will be. He is who depends on nothing and everything depends upon. I am. This is the one who is coming to rescue the Israelite people from their oppressor and take them to their own land, the land promised to their forefathers centuries before. Now that sounds pretty impressive. Is it good enough for Moses to get on board? Nope. Moses' third attempt to reason God out of using him for this rescue mission. Let's skip to Hebrews. That's not even a book. I didn't even get Hebrews out of there. That's a hybrid of Exodus and Hebrews. Hebrews. Let's go to Exodus chapter 4. Skipping ahead a little bit. Verse 1 of Exodus chapter 4, verse 1. Whew. That's difficult. Then Moses answered, "But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, 'The Lord did not appear to you.'" In other words, Moses says he doesn't have any credibility in the eyes of the Israelites. And from his perspective, this is a legitimate concern. I mean, think about it. He is someone who most of the Israelite people back in Egypt have never seen before. It's not like his portrait is up on the wall of every tent of the Israelites in Egypt. Moses? Who's Moses? He's just going to show up and declare that God has spoken to him, told him that God is going to deliver these people from generations of slavery in Egypt and take them back to the land that God promised to their forefathers. And the rescue plan is this. He's going to go to Pharaoh and ask for a 3-day vacation for the Israelite people so that they can go out into the desert wilderness to worship their God. Not surprisingly, the Pharaoh will refuse this request. That brings in phase 2 of the plan, which then will cause God to bring all kinds of ugly stuff down on the Egyptians so that they will gladly let the Israelites go and actually pay them to leave. That rescue plan is one that I would probably be a little nervous about sharing too, if I were in Moses' position. So God gives Moses 3 miraculous signs that he can do to prove that God has really spoken to him. These signs are described in verses 2 through 9 of Exodus chapter 4. The first sign is the ability to turn his shepherd's staff into a snake. The second sign is the ability to change his own hand into leprous and back by sticking it into his cloak and back like, And the third sign is the ability to turn water from the Nile River into blood when it's poured onto the ground. Well, Moses now has 3 miraculous signs that he can use to establish his credibility with the people, proving that he really is on a mission from God. Is that enough for Moses to get on board? No, it is not. Here comes Moses' 4th attempt to reason God out of using him for this rescue mission in verse 10 of Exodus 4. But Moses said to the Lord, "Oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue." Moses says he lacks eloquence as a public speaker. According to a study referenced in WebMD, The number one fear reported by people in this country is public speaking. People fear public speaking more than they fear death. See what I go through for you every week? And it's all because I love you. It's interesting to note what is said about Moses in Acts chapter 7, verse 22, in Stephen's famous speech. He says that Moses was instructed in all of the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. See, apparently, Moses was a powerful speaker when living in Egypt 40 years earlier. I guess having just a bunch of sheep to talk to for 40 years has got him a little tongue-tied. It's obvious, don't you think, that Moses is a desperate man. He is trying to use anything he can to convince God to pick someone else for this rescue mission. Verse 11 is God's reply. It says, "Then the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak.' So the Lord again reassures Moses, saying, 'I made your mouth. I gave you the ability to hear and to see. I'll help you speak. I'll teach you what to say. Just trust me. Now let's get going. We have a job to do.'" The Lord's been very gracious and patient with Moses, reasoning with him and reassuring him. Every time Moses says, "Well, I don't have what it takes to do this thing," and the Lord responds, "I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to give you everything you need to do this thing. Just trust me." Moses is still not willing to get on board, though. So here comes Moses' fifth attempt. This is number five, folks, to get God to use someone else for this rescue mission. And this really is my favorite of the five, because this gets right at what it's really all about. Verse 13. But he said, "Oh my Lord, please send someone else." We now see the real heart of Moses in this matter. He just doesn't want to go. He's tried to reason with God, bringing up issues that he hoped would cause God to choose someone else, but it hasn't worked. So now he just straight up pleads with God to use someone else. "Oh, please, Lord, please send someone else." And verse 14, "Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, 'Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he's coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs.'" So the Lord agrees to let Moses use his brother Aaron as his public speaker, but the discussion is now over. It's time to get moving. So after trying to squirm out of it five times, Moses finally gives in and he accepts God's call on his life to go back and lead the Israelite people out of Egypt. Now, this is a Bible study on faith, remember? Did you lose sight of that? Some might be critical of Moses for his determined reluctance to get on board with God's rescue mission. Some of you might be scratching your heads right now, wondering where Moses' faith is in all of this. And indeed, it's been a little difficult to find it during this dialogue between him and the Lord. But Jesus said, it's better to initially refuse to go and then end up going than to say you're going to go and then not follow through with your commitment. That's in Matthew chapter 21, verses 28 through 32. Moses will stick with the commitment that he made, giving his all to the work God calls him to, leading and caring for these people for the next 40 years of his life until he's dead. Moses may have come along reluctantly, digging his heels in at the first, even pleading with God to not make him go. But once he made the decision to go, he's in it to the end. And this is a characteristic of living by faith that is often overlooked. Making bold proclamations about what you're going to do is not a demonstration of faith. Following through with the commitment you make, even in the face of great difficulty, is a demonstration of faith. Do you remember the old story about the tortoise and the hare? For those of you who are not familiar with those terms, you could say the story of the turtle and the rabbit. A hare. A tortoise. What are those? You might remember the rabbit made all kinds of bold proclamations at the start of the race about how he's just going to smoke this turtle so easily. But who won the race? The turtle did. It was the slow, steady, consistent, focused progress of the turtle that won the race. The same is true for you and me as followers of Jesus Christ. It's not the big talker and the big shows that please the Lord. It's the one who finishes well. The one who finishes well. That is living by faith. Well, what happened next in the story? Moses, with his brother Aaron serving as his spokesman, went before Pharaoh of Egypt and he delivered God's message. The Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go into the desert so they can worship me. And Pharaoh replied, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. You're wasting my time and distracting my workers from their work. Pharaoh then gave an order to his slave drivers to make the Israelites get their own materials for making bricks while maintaining the same output quotas. That created an impossible situation for the Israelite workers. So when they failed to meet quotas, the slave drivers beat them without mercy, demanding that they work faster, making their life unbelievably unbearable. The Israelites, they then turned against Moses, blaming him for the worsened situation. The Israelite people, they had gotten their hopes up when Moses first arrives with this news that God has heard their cry for help and he's going to rescue them from Egypt. But when things get worse instead of better, after Moses met with Pharaoh, their hopes are shattered and they're deeply discouraged and beaten down. And Moses is to blame for all of it. From their perspective, it had been foolish to believe such a ridiculous thing. They've been slaves for 400 years in this country. Nothing was going to change. They're going to die working in these brickyards just like their fathers did. Well, Moses, he's very discouraged at that point too. Because it looks like this rescue operation is a complete bust, failing before it ever gets started. But in reality, that was just the calm before the storm, because God had not even stepped into the ring yet to fight for his people. So the Lord sent Moses back to Pharaoh with another message that basically said, Pharaoh, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. Which would you like? And Pharaoh says, I'll take the hard way. God says, okay. So began a series of plagues that the Lord brought against Egypt to discredit their own gods and to compel Pharaoh to let the Israelite people go. First, there was the plague of turning the Nile River to blood. The Nile River was the source of life for Egypt, and now it had become a symbol of death. And then there was the plague of frogs covering the land of Egypt. Frogs were everywhere. It said there were even frogs in the ovens and their kneading bowls. Then there was the plague of gnats swarming all over, biting all of the people and the animals. Then there was the plague of flies. They filled every place the Egyptians occupied. And then there was the plague on the livestock. All the livestock in Egypt died. Then there was the plague of boils. These painful sores break out on the skin of all of the Egyptian people. Then there was the plague of hail, which bombarded the land of Egypt, flattening and destroying all of the crops and killing any of the people and animals that had not sought shelter from the storm. Then there was the plague of locusts, which swarmed all over the land and consumed every green plant that had not already been destroyed. Then there was the plague of darkness that covered the land. It said the darkness was so thick and heavy that it could be felt. It lasted for 3 long days. During these plagues, the Pharaoh repeatedly agreed to let the people go to worship the Lord. But as soon as Moses would pray for him and relief would come from the plague, then Pharaoh would renege on his agreement and refuse to let the people go. So one last plague was brought against the Egyptians that left them so devastated that Pharaoh and his people begged the Israelites to leave their country. And literally paid them to do so, giving them their gold and silver, jewelry, and fine clothes as parting gifts. An angel of death would be sent across the land of Egypt who would kill the firstborn male of every family in Egypt, both people and animals. The Israelite families would be spared this terrible thing if the house that they were in had the blood of a lamb on its doorpost and frame. The destroyer would pass over that house and everyone inside would be saved. The Lord gave very detailed, specific instructions to Moses to then give to the people of Israel about the quality of the lamb that they were to select from their flocks. It was to be the best that they had, how it was to be butchered and eaten, how its blood was to be spread on the house's doorframe. By faith, the people followed the Lord's instructions and they were saved from the destroyer. Hebrews 11:28, by faith he, Moses, and the people kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. In closing this morning, I just want to leave you with this final thought. Is it trusting God after you have failed is an important part of living by faith. Moses had failed terribly. When God came 40 years later and essentially called him to do what he had attempted to do on his own 40 years earlier, he said, oh no, I've tried that already. I'm not doing that. I'm minding my own business. But by faith, he trusted God in the face of his own fears, in the face of his own failures. God loves you. God loves you. Just the way you are right now, no matter what you've done, all your failures and foibles and foolishness. See, the gospel is really portrayed in this story, isn't it? When we think about it. Because we've all failed. We've all attempted in our own strength and abilities, and we have all fallen short. God himself has sent his own Son, Jesus Christ, to rescue us. It says, by faith, trust in me, Jesus. And in the Passover, we have a portrayal of Christ too, don't we? As our Passover lamb. All those who have the blood of the lamb over their life, the destroyer passes over. They're saved. Let's bow our heads. Father, I pray for every single one of us in this room that we would be able to get hold of what it really means to walk by faith with you in this life. It's not about all the noise we make and the promises we make. It's about the promises that you have made and that you are keeping, and that we trust you for. I pray for every person in this room today, Lord, that we would take hold of your Passover lamb that you have provided for us, your Son, Jesus. We would trust in him and what he has done for us. He's our great rescuer, the one who has come to deliver us from our own slavery to sin and death, and lead us to your eternal country, a land truly flowing with milk and honey, a land of blessing and fullness. Help us, Lord, to let go of our old life and take hold of this new one that you have called us to. In Christ's name, amen.